Chiland Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the Friday episode of the Calcioland podcast. So we have a great show. I recorded an excellent interview with my friend Giulio Di Cienzo from a Vox to Box podcast. Yesterday, you'll hear that at the end, we went around Serie A. We talked a lot about the lower and mid table, tried to cover some stories on the league that we haven't discussed in a while. So I thought that went really well. You should enjoy that. Since it's Friday, we have 1,000 names on deck with his game picks. Serie A, it looks like everything's going to move forward this weekend, hopefully pretty smoothly. And with the January window around the corner, we're definitely going to talk a little bit about some transfer topics. But before we get to all that, I am joined by our dear friend, the producer, co-host of the show, Alex Goldberg, also has the fantastic Byline show on Chelsea. So, Alex, this week, and this is one of our patrons tweeted this, not at me, but in general, and it really made me think a lot. So this is what our friend Sir Slaughter 29 had to say. Dybala this, Dybala that. Chiesa played the same amount of games, scored 5 goals less, and is out until next month. One is labeled as injury prone and not trustworthy, while the other received nothing but praise and is always excused when doesn't perform too well. And he wonders, is there a bias here? So you know me, I'm really big into the bias thing. I know I certainly have some. I try to be aware of them. I try to let people know, hey, I think I have a weak spot for this person, or for some reason, this team or this player rubs me the wrong way. So let's look at this. You know, you look at this season, Dybala has 5 goals, 3 assists, 13 matches in Serie A. Chiesa, on the other hand, played 12 games and only has 1 goal and 1 assist. And I do think it's fair to say right now they are perceived pretty differently. So what do you make about all this, Alex? Do you think it's fair that maybe Dybala is getting a lot of criticism while Chiesa's put a little bit on this pedestal?
It's a great question. Shout out to the patron for that tweet. Really, really good point there. I think always perceptions when there's a huge difference, but maybe the reality or at least the facts are way different than the perception. I think it's really interesting to talk about. Now, in this case, I mean, I feel like yes on one of them, but no on the other. And I'll explain what I mean by that. So yes, I think it's probably unfair if Dybala is getting a lot of criticism and a lot of slam because, listen, I obviously am not watching Juve as closely as a Juve fan, but we can look at the stats and I've certainly watched a good handful of games. And when Dybala has been out there, he's been an above average player. There's no denying that. And he's performed in Serie A and the Champions League. And like you said, if you're going to add up like his goal contributions in Serie A and the Champions League and compare it to those of Chiesa, they're going to be way bigger. I mean, it's going to be a way higher total of goal contributions. And the overall play from Dybala has been good. Now, I always want to point out the difference in context right away before I even continue. And I'll say right off the bat, David, when I was hearing this question from you, I was immediately thinking, well, the perception is different because the ages are different. Okay. So Dybala is 28 years old and we know it's been a up and down, up and down, up and down tenure at Juve, whether he's been injured or managers haven't known how to use him or he's underperformed. And then he's at times looked like Messi. It's been all over the place. And when things are all over the place with a player, even if some of the things aren't his fault, fans get frustrated, fans get tired. I can speak from my perspective on Chelsea players, and I might even be too harsh on a player. And it's really because, David, I can't get a grasp on the player. Like, that's happened many times for me where I'm like, hey, you know what? Christian Pulisic's a pretty good example for me right now. I'm not going to talk too much about Pulisic, but I'm having that feeling with Pulisic right now. It's like, how do I rate him? Do I rate him a lot? I don't know. He's got a lot of talent, but he's injured a lot. And then when he's not injured, he's inconsistent a lot. And then also, he's not always used in the best way. I still don't even know his best position. So like, that's actually very similar to the narrative on someone like Paulo Dybala. So at times, I'm probably too harsh on him. But then again, if I boast him up too much, I'm probably being too easy on him. So I think when there's no smooth sailing for a player, it's hard to be too positive on the player. And if anything, David, fans, they go the negative route. So I kind of understand why fans might be too hard on Paulo Dybala, but no, it probably isn't fair, especially if you're going to look at the current context. Now, speaking about Chiesa, I also think not all goal contributions are created equal. So what are Juve doing poorly in? Okay, Serie A. What are they doing arguably well in? Champions League, first in the group. Need I remind myself, okay? And obviously a phenomenal goal against Chelsea in a 1-0 win over Chelsea. And that was a big win at the time, right? Big, big, big win. So I feel like that goal gets him a little bit more credit. You know, he stepped up when a Juve player needed to step up against the European champions. And once again, if Dybala is performing well in Serie A, and yes, I understand he also is performing well in the Champions League, but maybe he didn't have the same impact versus Chelsea and the rest of the Champions League group is easier. Okay, so you got to take that into context. If Dybala, though, is performing better than Chiesa in, say, Serie A, but they're not doing well in Serie A, but Chiesa has two goals and had a big moment in the Champions League, that's also going to skew perception, because right now I feel like, I could be wrong, I mean, I'm sure Juve fans want to get in the top four, absolutely, but I feel like the competition they have more energy for, more appetite for at this point is the Champions League, probably for a million reasons, right? They still want to win it. And of course, they've won Serie A so many times and they didn't win it last year. So maybe they might even feel a little defeated and depleted in that competition. So once again, that's not really Dybala's fault, but I feel like that Chiesa goal against Chelsea in the Champions League and now finishing first in the group, it's giving him more stock. So you add that on top of the fact that he's 4 years younger. David, let's be real. There's more of an appetite probably around Europe for someone like Chiesa. So even if a Juve fan wants to sell Chiesa, they're probably going to be more high on Chiesa because at this point he can get a higher return. And once upon a time, Dybala certainly could have got a really nice one, but injuries and age will now play a part. So I feel like, yes, it's unfair on Dybala, but it's not really a mystery to me why Chiesa still gets this buzz and why he gets defended, like you said, even if maybe he's not performing as well as the praise would kind of make you think. So yes, on Dybala, but I guess I'm not surprised that Chiesa still maybe be being put in a different and a better light. So yeah, that's my take. But of course, I am an outsider here, so I'm interested to hear your perspective.
Well said, Alex. You hit on a lot of points. And again, kudos to Sir Slaughter 29. Really, really great. I hope you don't mind that we use that for the opening segment. So you hit on a lot of things that I have as well. And let's talk about bias. Like, I'll be very honest. I was not a fan of Chiesa at Fiorentina. I really strongly believe that Juve had made a big mistake signing Chiesa instead of Locatelli, getting Chiesa while they also had Kulusevski. And boy, did Chiesa prove me wrong. I think he's been awesome when healthy at Juve. And Dybala has always been one of my favorite players. I remember I went to watch years ago a Derby della Mole, Juve Torino, and I saw Dybala in person. He was just incredibly impressive in person. And I will say this, Chiesa has yet to come even close to having some of the best seasons that Dybala had at Juve. So I think there's a lot of fair points that you hit on that. But there's also the context is also very important. So let's look at where they're at. Dybala was a fairly healthy player, but very healthy player until 2020. So you look at his games played, the least amount in Serie A was 30 for Juve. Then he had 20 games, and now he's played in 12. And the issue, though, is that his injuries, and look, last year he battled COVID, and to me, anyone that had to deal with that, it's not for me to judge. I don't know how bad. I think it's very unfair to compare the COVID of one player to another. So look, last season, I think it's kind of a wash. This year, I think what's frustrating is that every time he comes back, and then we saw in the game against Venezia where he came out after 12 minutes. And the context is really important, is Dybala is going to sign a big new extension, and Dybala is going to get a huge salary, which look, when you look at the first few years at Juve he's earned, it makes sense that Juve, well, he is a player that a lot of people know. He is kind of a brand that's known outside Serie A. Without Ronaldo on the team, I would say he's probably the most famous player. I would say Chiellini is famous, but like in different ways. So there is this huge contract. And, you know, when I look at Juve and they're going to offer, they're going to give him a very big salary. Okay. he's probably earned that. The problem is a 5-year contract. It's like that I really can't understand. I'd really like to know who Juve is bidding against, because if there really was a market and you're like, hey, I don't want to lose the asset with Dybala, I don't want to lose him for free, worst case scenario, then I can flip him. It's like, well, I don't know if there's really much of a market, because if a team wanted Dybala, why would they have to pay Juve? They could just sign him on a Bosman starting next year, and we're not hearing really about teams really being in the mix. Maybe it's because they know he's already going back to Juve, but again, who's Juve bidding against on a 5-year deal? So I think there's that. So we look at it through that frame of mind. And, you know, momentum, you settled, you hit on this, Alex, too. Like, Dybala has had injuries, and when he's played well this season, but there's kind of this perception that he always breaks down. And Chiesa too, but I feel like he gets a little bit of a pass, because we're also like, well, you know, Chiesa played a ton at the Euro. Maybe he was run into the ground by both Mancini and Allegri. So again, maybe this is a bias where we're willing to give Chiesa a break and we're not. And then, you know, the other thing too is also, I really think this documentary All or Nothing, the way it came out, the release time, Chiesa comes off looking great, like a really humble, salt of the earth kind of guy, not pretentious. So I think that's also another factor there. So I think this is a fair point to look at it through the lens of the bias. But I also think if you look at the context of the situations of the players, I could see how they are perceived this way. Okay, let's shift gears. Let's start talking a little bit more about transfers. Vlahovic has been absolutely sensational recently in Serie A. Alex, you and I were talking about the race for the top striker in Serie A. We thought Immobile, Zapata, Vlahovic is right in that mix there. So I want to ask you, you're very familiar with Premier League circles, not just Chelsea. Is this a player that there is a lot of buzz fans of the Premier League right now?
Yes, there is. There definitely is, because, listen, striker's always that position that if you don't have a goal scorer going for your team, you're looking for a striker. And especially young strikers that are doing well in foreign leagues, David, there's a huge appetite, especially from the younger demographic, for them, like all the time. When Luka Jovic was doing really well the first time in the Bundesliga, this guy was overrated through the roof. I mean, through the roof. There's this allure to young foreign strikers, especially from a younger Premier League fan. And of course, on Twitter, you're going to have a lot of young Premier League fans. So absolutely, is there an appetite for Vlahovic? For sure. One tweet I saw, though, that was really interesting to me, and I'm actually not sure if it was from a Premier League circle or a Premier League account, but obviously a lot of Premier League accounts interacted with it and agreed, David, was someone said that right now Vlahovic is doing almost everything imaginable that's unsustainable, which was really interesting to me. And they kind of parallel it to Belotti. And I'd actually be interested in getting your take if you want to add that on to the question that I asked back to you. But they were saying, although he obviously is a good player and he's doing really, really well right now, that it does kind of feel like what he's doing right now is a bit unsustainable. And I could totally see, and I'm sorry, this tweet also added that, okay, if someone wants to get him for maybe, that could be totally worth it, especially if it was like a Leicester City or someone like that. But if some big club thinks that it's a $70, $80 million striker right now, they could be sorely disappointed. So I think people who pay enough attention definitely are interested in Vlahovic, but I don't think he's at all being rated like a Erling Haaland, if you will. So I am kind of interested in getting your take. And actually, before I ask you about something different, what is your take? I'm not sure if you saw that tweet, but do you agree that what Vlahovic is doing right now is maybe a little bit unsustainable?
Wow, great question. And I do like the comparison on Belotti, definitely, at least on the surface. He was a striker that for a while was scoring a lot of goals on a team that wasn't particularly good. There was this huge release clause because Torino wanted to keep him. And look, I remember when we started this podcast for years, we talked about Belotti. And look, you know, he won the Euro, probably wasn't a huge reason why. was linked to Inter. This is going to be his last season at Torino. But I think Vlahovic is another level. And I say it as someone that has come around on him, like both Napoli outsider and Enrico Passarella were really, really high on him going last season. Now he's in a more offensive system, scoring a ton of goals. So I'm going to say I slightly disagree. I think Vlahovic is going to be really, really special. I think he's the perfect consolation prize for someone that doesn't get Haaland or be Haaland's replacement, although maybe for Dortmund he's out. So interesting question. I can totally see why one would make the parallel between the two and say that maybe this is unsustainable. And I'm going to say no. I think he can score in so many different ways. A few people have said, this is a striker where he can really fit any system. Like we've talked about Osimhen and Lautaro. And look, Lautaro's versatile, but, you need to make it work. And I feel like Vlahovic, you could just put him at your number nine and you're all set and he'll score a ton. So, no, I can see why the comparison is there, but I'm going to say I think he's going to be just fine.
Okay. I appreciate your take. And the last part of that tweet was when they were comparing him to Belotti, it was a little bit more also of the team situation. Like, man, we know what Torino said Belotti's release clause was then. And you obviously pointed out, David, that Torino was not saying Belotti is this 150 or whatever the release clause was. They weren't saying that that was his true value, but they were saying that because they didn't want to lose him, which is obviously the difference. But of course, hindsight is 2020, and maybe Torino should have thought about maybe selling him for probably some nice handsome bids at the time. And they were kind of saying, well, even though Vlahovic means a lot to Fiorentina, maybe he isn't the price that teams could be willing to pay right now for him. So very interesting. And listen, I'm not at all agreeing with that. I have to ask people who are watching him more on a weekly basis. And obviously I'm in a situation where, yes, Chelsea do not have a striker firing for us right now, but I am a huge Lukaku defender. I think the context, if you look at it, is really important in terms of not being harsh on Lukaku. Came in, did well. Then, all right, we didn't really know how to play with him. Then he got injured. Now he has COVID. So, of course, Premier League circles are going to be quite harsh, but I still think Lukaku is going to be a great success. So Vlahovic is obviously not a player that I'm personally looking at for my team. So speaking of the Premier League, David, we're talking about Vlahovic. And there's this team that I really want to get relegated because I don't even care for them. And I know it's a little contradicting to say I don't care for them and their new money, a little hypocritical maybe, but whatever, it is what it is. At least Chelsea have had it for a while now. So, David, could you see Vlahovic maybe joining Newcastle?
No, I don't. And the reason I say that is not long ago, Arsenal, contacted Fiorentina, had contacted his agents. They were saying, look, we'll pay a big sum. We know he doesn't have much left on his contract, but he is the type of striker we kind of want to have in our young core. And to me, the fact that his agent wouldn't even talk to Arsenal leads me to believe that that wouldn't happen. Now, obviously, Newcastle can probably pay as much as they want. And look, I never fault anyone for taking the biggest offer, so that would change. But I think based on the fact that his agent wouldn't even entertain the thought of talking to Arsenal says a lot. And look, Fiorentina, and I don't blame them, they're saying, look, you want Vlahovic, you have to come talk to us. He's under contract. But Juve, as usual, which is what they do, they go to the player first and they're like, okay, let's work something out, and then they bank on the player's will to come. And I think within Serie A, that's really the only team I see him going to. I saw a lot of Inter fans saying, oh, if we get Vlahovic, then we'll just win the league for the next 10 years. I'm not sure Inter can afford him without the wages already too with what they're paying. I guess they would have to sign him on a Bosman. But dealing with Fiorentina, and right now there's a lot of issues between Fiorentina and Marotta. I'm going to write about this because I think it's very interesting. Comiso's right-hand man, Barone, accused Inter of, delaying payments to their players and then using those savings on the transfer market and saying, hey, we're doing everything by the book. And then you guys are kind of skirting the rules and then investing that money that you're saving. So there's a lot of bad blood. So I think Inter would only have to sign him on a Bosman. And then at that point, I think Juve is already way ahead. I still think Fiorentina was going to do all they can to avoid having to sell Vlahovic to Juve to get some return, kind of what happened to Chiesa. But I think in Italy, it would only be that. I'm not sure if, like, you know, a signature club, say Bayern Munich, you know, it's like, hey, you know, we want a young striker. And they're like, this is the guy. Would that maybe work? Probably. But I don't think it would be like a Newcastle based on what happened with Arsenal. And I'm going to say in Serie A, I'd be very surprised if he goes to any team that's not Juve.
Interesting. Okay, David. All right. Well, let's get to some transfer topics. It doesn't feel like it right now. I don't know why. Maybe because of the COVID distractions, at least in the Premier League, or maybe the fact that I'm just so depressed about how Chelsea are playing. But we really do have a transfer window upon us. So let's get to this here in the transfer. Are there any legs to the potential for Luis Alberto swap?
Lazio fans would have a heart attack just entertaining that thought. So this is why I think this rumor is out here, because Arthur at Juve is working with Federico Pastorello. He did a lot of interviews recently, and he was like, well, listen, Arthur's not getting playing time at Juve. There's a World Cup coming. We have to make sure he plays more. And he pointed out that Arthur came in when there was a different manager at Juve and that Allegri doesn't really rate him. And who is the manager at Lazio that was at Juve when Arthur arrived? Sarri. So I think that's kind of how all that started. Obviously, of course, Luis Alberto has not played much. Him and Sarri have not gone along. Would Luis Alberto improve Juve? Absolutely. That they desperately need a midfielder that can kind of set up a striker. They've been lacking that a ton. But I think really that's kind of where that rumor came, is like the manager thing and all. Now, I don't think Sarri, A, he's not really that involved with transfers to begin with. I don't think Sarri was like, go get me Arthur, especially because we know that swap Pjanic-Arthur had more to do with finances than anything else. So Pastorello's doing his job. I think he's wonderful at his job, but I think that's why a lot of that rumor started. The other thing is Arthur earns a huge salary. Luis Alberto, yeah, earns, but not as much as Arthur. And on one hand, Luis Alberto has been a much more productive player in Serie A. So I wouldn't write it off altogether. I think it's more likely, though, that Arthur ends up at Roma than he does at Lazio. They absorb bigger salaries more frequently. Maybe they do a swap on before. But look, if you're a Juve fan and they can pull this swap off, it would be an early Christmas or late Christmas present if it happens in January, for sure. But I think it's more the conjecture started this rumor.
Interesting. Okay, David. Hey, what did you make of Manolas leaving Napoli for Olympiacos?
Yeah, this one, saying that it came out of the blue is not fair, because look, Manolas wanted to go back home to Greece in the summer. He came close. It didn't work out. Napoli didn't want to take a big loss on him. But look, Manolas has been terrible at Napoli. So the deal happened. He goes to Olympiacos. And this is an interesting discussion too on plusvalenza, amortizations, things that we've talked a lot about, because this Manolas deal, how he arrived at Napoli, is fascinating, and also how Napoli sold him for $2 million, but then ends up taking a huge loss on him. So originally the Manolas deal, and I have forgotten about this, that Diarra was involved in this. So Manolas goes to Napoli, Diarra goes to Roma. They are recorded as separate transactions, so they can each do a plusvalenza there. Manolas cost Napoli 35 million euro. And, you know, this was just a few years ago, but the way Napoli does amortization, some clubs spread it out evenly. So let's say you sign a player, 10 million, 4-year contract, you're amortizing 2.5 million per year, 4 times 25 4.25 is 10, so that's how you amortize it. Napoli, on the other hand, they do a heavier amortization in the first year. So that 35 million fee, they amortized 40% of that the first year, 30%, the second, 20%, the third season. So he got to the third season, so they had amortized 90% of his value. So they sell him for essentially 2 million. They took a loss, but nowhere near as much as you would think, because someone who's not familiar with amortization is like, oh my God, they spent 35 million, they only got two back, and they almost break even. How is that possible with that amortization? The other thing with Manolas is I remember when he left Roma, you know, I had some friends at the club, some that were still there, and the buzzword that a lot of them were like, we did the deal of the century here. They thought Manolas was always a little bit overrated. He had speed that made up for a lot of his deficiencies, but as he got older, that speed wasn't, you know, that is one, especially on defenders, that is one that tends to decline a little bit faster. But what's interesting for Napoli is the silver lining is when Manolas arrived, a lot of people assumed that he was the early replacement for Koulibaly, and that they had lost Albiol, who was a very underrated Napoli player, so they wanted to replace him. But they also kind of wanted to set up life after Koulibaly. And they were like, look, Manolas can be the best center back on a really good team. But turned out he wasn't. I think Napoli overall, usually when they spend a lot of money, they very rarely miss. But here definitely was one that they didn't. I do think Manolas ended up being one of the most overrated players in Serie A in recent years. For Napoli, too, they didn't want to give him up in the summer. They've amortized a little bit more. But the other thing, too, is his salary is massive. And they were like, you know what? Yeah, we're going to take a small loss on his amortized value, but we'll offset that by saving, because he was earning 4 million net, which for Napoli is a lot of money. So I think if you're kind of an outsider and you remember Manolas from Roma's run in the Champions League, and he's highly rated in FIFA, we know speed in FIFA always makes players look good. I don't think it's a huge loss for Napoli, and it sounds like he was also a little bit of a distraction in the locker room.
Very interesting. Yeah, that's a lot of stuff that definitely people in a Premier League circle wouldn't fully know. But thanks to, of course, that moment with Roma and the amazing Peter Drury call that was just goosebump worthy, obviously, when Roma stunned Barcelona. That's what I'm always going to think of when I think about Manolas. So good luck to him back home, you could say, right? All right, so last topic here in this segment, David, which teams are most desperate to make a move in January?
Well, look, Napoli, even before Manolas injury, and look, we're recording this. There's been some buzz on the Africa Cup potentially, you know, being rescheduled, not taking place in January. You look at where the world's headed with COVID, you know, maybe that's what's going to happen. But let's go on the assumption that does happen. Napoli, definitely, they needed help even before Manolas left. They need depth. Milan, of course, really need a center back. We've talked about them in recent weeks. Botman from Lille, he's going to be really expensive. A cheaper idea would be bringing back Caldara from Venezia, although I'm not so sure he's really a player for a top team. So Milan definitely with Kier, replacing him, and then they could probably use another striker. And then the teams at the bottom, like Genoa, as usual, they are very, very active in January. I'm sure that won't change. Cagliari, really bad shape there. I think Lazio is going to try to keep bringing in more players that suit Sarri's system. And then Roma, of course, we know Mourinho doesn't trust his bench. It sounds like Roma are going to support him there. So I think those are the teams. Juve, too, I'm sure will try to look for opportunities. I don't think Inter will do much. They have a solid squad. So we'll see. Atalanta, I think they'll try to get Balga, which would be a really nice move. So those are our transfer updates.
Okay. Good stuff. And as always, there's really good stuff when we bring the ever entertaining Thousand Names into the fold here. So, David, who are you and Thousand picking for this week's edition of Game Picks?
Excellent. So we do have some games this afternoon. Serie A kicks off this afternoon, but these games are for the weekend. So first up, he picked Bologna. Juve, that's tomorrow, Saturday. He has it 1-1. Morata, Svanberg. He says that Mihailovic is going to continue to make life even more miserable for Allegri in front of his friend Andrea Agnelli. If you remember, Andrea Agnelli flirted with the idea of hiring Mihailovic a few times. Boy, would that have been a disaster. And Fausento says that Mihailovic deserved Juve's bench. And he says Teate is going to cancel Cuadrado from the pitch and that Szczesny is a disaster. In Italian, Bologna, Juve 1-1, Morata, Svanberg, Sinisa inferisce sulla carcassa di Allegri davanti al suo amico Agnelli, meritava lui la panchina bianconera, Teate cancella dal campo Cuadrado, Szczesny disastroso. Bologna have been pretty good recently, but I do think Juve have been solid. I expect a Cortomuso win for Juve 1-0, and I'm going to go goal by Morata. Next up, huge game, Milan-Napoli. And by the way, shout out to our friend Matteo Bonetti. I was very happy to see that him and Dre are traveling to Milano to cover the game in person. All the best to them. Really, really awesome stuff. So this game's on Sunday. That's the night game. Thousand has it 2-2, braced by Kissi, goals by Mertens and Lozano. And he says Pioli can't win even with two fake, not made up penalties. I guess Kessie is going to score two on penalties. And he says that Spalletti without Osimhen is funnier than watching Salernitana. And he says Petagna has nothing to do with what this team is about. In Italian, Milan Napoli 2-2. Kessi, two goals, Mertens, Lozano, Pioli non vince neanche con due rigori inesistenti, Spalletti senza Osimhen fa più ridere della Salernitana, Petagna imprescindibile per questa squadra. Actually, I translated that incorrectly, saying that Petagna is really important for this team. I agree, draw. This really strikes me as the... You know, better to have two people injured than one dead. Both these teams are in the top four, but they are facing a lot of injuries. They don't have a ton of momentum right now. So I think I'm going to go 0-0. I think they're going to walk out of there with a point each. And then last game, 1000 has Lazio hosting Genoa. Lazio winning 2-0s goes by Acerbi and Milinkovic-Savic. He says Shevchenko is going to get smacked in the face also with the Sarri's hands dirty of nicotine. And he said he's an embarrassing coach and that Genoa need to bring back Preziosi and Ballardini. Pronostico Lazio-Genoa 2-0, Acerbi Milinkovic-Savic, Shevchenko preso a schiaffi pure dalle mani sporche di nicotina di Sarri, allenatore imbarazzante, vogliamo Preziosi and Ballardini. Wouldn't surprise me if Ballardini comes back. He is known for saving Genoa. I agree, Lazio is going to win this one. Lazio have been really up and down a lot, but Genoa have been really bad. I'm actually going to go 3-0. Lazio, I'll go Immobile and a brace by my boy Milinkovic-Savic. So those are our game picks. As always, thank you so much to our dear friend, 1000 Names. But before we get to our interview available to all, the great Giulio Di Cienzo, I think you'll love his energy to bring you into the weekend. We're going to do a part of the podcast for our patrons. If you enjoy our pod, you can support us in different ways. You can leave a review on iTunes, subscribe, tweet about our pod. We always appreciate it. Or you can support us on Patreon. We have an episode on every Tuesday just for patrons. Next week, we have our monthly special with Napoli Outsider, which I got to be honest, I think is worth the subscription alone. And, you know, we have articles and a great community. So if you enjoy Calcio, and this could also be a nice gift for the Calcio fan in your life, a subscription to our Patreon. I do my best to make sure people get great value there.
You know, what's still my favorite part about the podcast is having regular guests, getting to know them, chatting with them, usually around every 6 weeks or so. And this year we've had the next guest, our good friend Giulio Di Cienzo, on quite a few times. It's been really wonderful getting to know him. He's one of the hosts of my favorite culture podcast in any language, Box to Box, based in Italy. Really, really great stuff. And what we've been doing with Giulio, he's kind of become our mid-lower table specialist, but I always like to get his thoughts on the top. So, Giulio, it's always a real pleasure to welcome you. Bentornato to Cultureland.
Thank you. Thank you so much, David. I'm here to torture the English language once more. And thank you so much. You are so, so kind every time.
Okay. So let's start with Inter, your team. And look, you know, I've been pretty confident that Inter was the best team going into the season. And I think since the derby, although they didn't win, there really is this sense that Inter went a step forward. So I know Scaramanzia in Italy took a ferro, do what you got to do. But do you think it would be fair to say that right now Inter are the clear favorites for the Scudetto?
Well, I agree with your vision of Inter in general, but a clear favorite is a little bit too much, because Inter is among the favorites as it was in the beginning, in my opinion. Now Inzaghi works give more certainties than before. As you said, from the derby, Inter changed the perception, his ability to impact on the games and get some big wins in his road to add some points in Serie A. The top table of Serie A is every team is too near, so it's a little bit too soon to tell that the Inter is the clear favorite. This is the first step, and now we have to go on, also because the next month will be very, very, very hard to manage for Inter.
For sure. So let's talk about the top four a little bit more. As you said, the teams are very close. So let's start with Fiorentina, because they've been playing really well recently. Do you think there is a scenario in which they can finish in the top four in Serie A?
It's hard to tell, because Fiorentina, the problem about Fiorentina is that Inter Milan, Atalanta and Napoli are in the top four right now. And it's pretty obvious to tell in this way, but I'm already excluding Roma, Juventus, and if you want also Lazio. So it's hard to determine which team have some probability to drop out from this race. Fiorentina is making a great job. Italiano is confirming all the good stuff that he put on Spezia in Serie A last year. They are in a very good position, and they could get even something more, because they lost some points in a strange way. But it's hard to get in the top four. There is something to consider if you look at the Serie A table on the last year. Apart for Inter, Milan, Atalanta, Juventus and Napoli gets in just 2 points at the end of the season.
Yeah.
So it's a very near, all the teams are very near in that position. So Fiorentina must believe in that.
Yeah, fair. So let's talk a little bit more about the top four. As you mentioned, very close. Inter 40 points, Milan 39, Atalanta 37, Napoli 36. If, say, Fiorentina finds a way to sneak in, if you had to pick one of these four teams currently in the top four, which one has the biggest risk of dropping out of the top four?
It's hard to tell, because Milan is and Atalanta are the consolidated team with the same coach and with a certain way to play that is well determined. Napoli is the most new team, because they changed the coach, but they have a deep roster full of quality. So it's not so easy to tell which one could drop out, because we are talking about the top four position. For example, I could imagine that Milan will get in the third position and Napoli in the second or in the first and something like that. But out of the top four, it's really hard. The only thing that could change some position in that is a deep crisis of results, something or some injuries, something that change really the things that like you saw in Napoli in the last month, that without Anguissa, Osimhen, sometimes
yeah.
Son, they have Fabian Ruiz, the Koulibaly, they have some problems in getting the results. There's the need to make something strange to get someone off of that team out of the top four, in my opinion.
Yeah, I've seen some Inter fans and maybe those that didn't really like Spalletti that much saying, oh, here we go, Napoli's falling apart. But I really think it's the injuries. I don't think it's
without any doubt.
Yeah, without a doubt. So let's talk. I was going to ask you who was more disappointing between Roma and Lazio, but that would be a little bit a leading question because maybe they kind of are where they are supposed to be. So let me ask it to you. This way, did you expect more from either Roma or Lazio this season?
Not from Roma, because Roma has some serious roster problems. And also, if they bought some players, Shomuro, Dov, Abraham, this summer, they didn't solve all of their problems. They have big defensive problems, but they managed to get the points. They are in the sixth position, and they could be some position in place of Fiorentina. They have some good numbers in Serie A, also from the attacking side and the defensive side. So Mourinho is getting some work. It's not the work that you expect from peak Mourinho, but it's not peak Mourinho, and so they get the result that they need to get, and they are even points with Juventus that has a different roster, a different manager, and so on. So I'm not disappointed from Roma. From Lazio, yes, instead, because it's not a problem of points, because 25 points, they are near in the of the top four position. But the problem is the Sarri's impact. It is not visible right now. They have problems in every phase of the game. They are not growing in the way that everyone expects from a Sarri team. And I see something very, very traumatic in the relationship between Sarri and in particular Luis Alberto, but also Milinkovic-Savic, and so there's something that is not going the right way.
Yeah, I gotta say, I'm pretty surprised that Lotito's in such a rush to give Sarri an extension, but it seems like it's probably more of a character fit that they get along and more than results. So I agree there. Let's start working our way down the table. You are our expert on this. And if you guys are ever on an Italian train and a dude is watching Salernitana Genoa on demand, it's probably Giulia. So let's go to Empoli, because I want to ask you a lot about Empoli and Venezia, because I've really enjoyed watching them this season. So who surprised you more in a positive way? Because Empoli have been up and down in Serie A, and they're doing great. They're off to a really, really fast start. And Venezia hadn't been in Serie A in ages. So which one of the two surprised you more?
Empoli is 2 points shy from Juventus and Roma, and there's a point more than Sarri's Lazio. So I have to say Empoli, because I expected Empoli maybe at in 3-4 months have 26 points. They find some big wins against Napoli, against Juventus, against Fiorentina, and they are a very solid team. They have some problems because on the defensive side they are not so reliable, but they are playing young players, they are developing talent. Andrea Zoli maintained an enjoyable style of play, and inside his tactics the players are blossoming. They change often their players, but everyone gives his contribution, and they're a very good team to watch with the young talents that we will talk about in the future. So I must say Empoli. Venezia is one of the surprising Serie A, because every time if you look at the names, you don't think that they could stay in Serie A, but instead they always get some good games. They know how to play. They have some good ideas, and also some good players like Johnson, Okereke, and so on. And so there is a great work from Zanetti as well, but at a different level, because they have 16 points, and they have to fight a lot to stay in Serie A.
Fair, fair. So let's talk a little bit about Udinese, because I wanted to ask you this. And you and I, at the beginning of the season, we agreed there's just a lot of bad teams in Serie A. And Udinese lost Musso and De Paul, so they lost their best player and one of the best keepers in Serie A. And I got to say, I was a little surprised that Gotti was sacked, because I think he's an above-average manager in Serie A. Were you also surprised, or do you think Udinese were underachieving? Because for me, they were kind of where they were supposed to be.
For in some way, maybe they were underachieving, but because the roster of Udinese suggests that the team could stay some points could have some points more than they have right now, but Udinese wasn't a bad team. They had with Gotti, they hadn't shown to have some problems in the tactical side of the motivational side. It was something normal. Everything was seen as something that it's happening, but it wasn't a team that was struggling in some way. So for me, it's a strange decision, and it's a strange decision for ancora di più,
even more.
Thank you, because of the promotion of Cioffi, that was the vice of Gotti. Because if you change your manager, you always find to get a shock and get something from outside that brings something different. Usually, in this case, you don't have neither this this thing. So I don't know why we get the sacking of Gotti, and we'll see Cioffi what we'll do. The first games were good, but there is nothing new for sure. We saw the similar team that we saw with Gotti. So it's a strange situation, and we have to remember that Gotti lost also Roberto Pereira for injury. Yeah. That is a key player for this team, and so he doesn't have so much responsibilities. And Udinese is above Venezia, Spezia, Genoa, Cagliari, and Salernitana. So it's there's time to get problems.
Sure. So last time you were on, you told us about Pasquale Mazzocchi on a Venezia player that I've been following since. So this time I wanted to ask you about Beto, because I have a feeling he's right up your alley. This is the Udinese striker, un classico bomber di provincia. So what do you make of Beto? Do you think he's better than what we saw for, say, someone like Simi last year? Do you see a future for him in Serie A?
Allora, Norberto Bercique Gomez Betuncal, also known as Beto, is for me, it's an interesting player. First of all, he's born in the 1998. So it's a player that has a lot of time to develop his skill. The question is how far he can get, because he needs to improve, for sure, to refine his skills. He has a lot of raw talent. Sometimes he seems very, very raw. He cannot control his movements. He has too many ideas of what to do at the same time. So he needs to grow in nearly every aspect of the game. But he already scored 7 goals in a team with all his players scored 22. So it's already a player that is important for his team. He has great physicality, and he knows how to play with his back on the door and in his front of the door. So it's an interesting player, but he needs some play time to develop his skills. But we will talk about Beto also in the next years.
Awesome. Okay, so I want to ask you, Salernitana obviously are doomed in more ways than one. Maybe they won't even be allowed to finish the season. But two teams that are really hurting are Cagliari and Genoa. Now, I think Cagliari has a better squad than Genoa, but Genoa also has new owners. Who knows? They brought in Shevchenko. So of these two teams, who do you think has a better chance to try to get back on track? I mean, lucky for them, there are a lot of bad teams in Serie A, but they are in trouble, down at 10 points, just 2 more than Salernitana.
No, as you said properly, from the point of the roster, Genoa and Cagliari are not among the the last team in Serie A. Spezia and Venezia, as we told, have worse names. The situation about them is hard because also maybe harder than how it appears, because when you have a team with that got some names that is in this situation, there is something that that is completely wrong. And Genoa at least had some injuries and could change something, as just changed the manager, and they has some perspective on the calcio mercato, and something will change in Genoa in the next month. Cagliari has a deeper problem for me, because they are in the same situation of the last year, and when you have the same situation with the same roster for 2 years in a row, and you already changed your manager, there is something that is deeply wrong. Yeah. And another change is difficult because you have to pay 3 trainers and it's hard to find someone better than Mazzarri in this situation. And Iachini is already in Serie B. So there is a big problem in Cagliari. And I know that it's strange, but maybe they need to change the team. Also getting someone that that is not so big in his names, but is more fit for that situation. For example, Budin, Cáceres, that kind of players are not belonging to this situation. And for Genoa, the biggest problem is the offensive front. They need a striker, because the Caicedo experiment went south, and they need something more in that situation. But apart from that, Genoa is a better team and it's a better team mentality than Cagliari.
I never would have imagined Diego Godin's career coming to an end, battling relegation on Cagliari. Pretty remarkable.
2 years ago, he scored in the Europa League final, and now...
Yeah, that's pretty remarkable for sure. So let's talk about two other teams. And actually, you know, Torino, remind me a little bit about the funk Genoa and Cagliari are in. Like, there was a dark cloud over Torino for a while. And I feel like Juric is really who turned that around. And then Sassuolo, who I think got a very nice hire, Dionisi, who was at Empoli before. So these are two teams that did well with their coaching changes. They are pretty close in the standings. Who do you think is going to finish ahead at the end of the season between Torino and Sassuolo?
First of all, you made to me a similar question about Bologna and Sassuolo, and you were the first one to see Bologna growing like they grow in that period. So big props to you for that that vision. About Torino and Sassuolo, allora, something like 2 weeks ago, the obvious answer was Torino, because Sassuolo was struggling and Dionisi didn't have the right choices, and it seems that he couldn't get some results. But right now, I believe a little more in his work. He find a good Frattesi. He got the goals from Scamacca, and also get something from Raspadori. It's not so easy. Torino has a problem also, like we told for Genoa, on the offensive side. Torino needs something in the January transfer market to solve the Belotti problem, because he doesn't belong to this team. If they get a proper striker for Juric, they could change something in their season and get much more points, because they are Juric has worked a lot on the defensive side, on the intensity, on his midfielders like Lukic, Pobega, and Prat. Yeah. But he need a striker that is more with the characteristic that he wants. And then we'll see if Sassuolo sells something on January. I don't think so, because they nearly never made that. But maybe they could for some situations and so on. For these reasons, we'll see in January. And January will make a great difference for the final results of these two teams.
Fair. Yeah, because Sassuolo do have some players that are targets for...
Scusami, I remember that Torino is the fourth best defense in Serie A right now.
Yeah, well, they you're right. Juric definitely fixed that. So let's flip. Instead of defense, let's talk offense. I think we have a very intriguing Capocannoniere race, despite Ronaldo and Lukaku leaving the league. So I thought for a while Immobile was probably the best pick. Then I was like, Duvan Zapata's having a great season. Maybe he can keep up with Immobile. But now Vlahovic is just playing at a ridiculous level. I think he's going to finish the season at Fiorentina. So for the purpose of this question, let's assume he finishes the season there. Do you think he can win the Capocannoniere over Immobile Zapata? Or maybe there's someone else you have in mind too?
No. Vlahovic is a solid name because he scored 21 goals in the last Serie A in a less offensive team than this Fiorentina. And the players who scores more than him are gone, more or less, because Ronaldo, Lukaku, and vabbè, then there was Muriel that now is struggling a little bit, so I don't think that he will get 20-plus goals in just 6 months. So Vlahovic is a solid choice, also because he's a penalty scorer for his team. That is important for this kind of race, especially for with a player like Immobile that is a specialist. But Vlahovic has everything to get the Capocannoniere of this Serie A.
Fair. So let's close on two other strikers. We have Simeone, who at Verona has been absolutely incredible. 12 goals since early October. And your boy, Lautaro, put that in air quotes, he's been coming on recently after a little slump. So just from today until the end of the season, who do you think is going to score more goals, Simeone or Lautaro?
Allora, I think Lautaro is a more consistent scorer, based on his recent years in Inter. We have to remember that Giovanni Simeone is born in 1995, so it's already a young striker, and right now he is in an incredible condition, and he finds some spectacular goals also. So he feel great confidence, and we'll see that. But I think in the end that Lautaro will get something more in the final score of the season, because Vabe is an important player for Inter. Inter is a very offensive team.
I
think that in the end, maybe Lautaro will also learn how to score penalties, and that could be another important thing to add, but I think that Simeone is in a very special moment, but I think Lautaro is, I bet on Lautaro's consistency.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Also because I think Zeko, as more the season goes along, will slow down a little bit. Before I let you go, Giulio, and always a fantastic pleasure to have you on the podcast, I have to ask you, what was more exciting recently? Inter getting out of the group stage in the Champions League or getting blocked by Amanda Knox on Twitter?
Getting blocked by Amanda Knox, because I really enjoyed the attitude of Amanda Knox, and so I was deeply concerned about the block.
Okay. Well, Giulio, I can't thank you enough. You did a fantastic job this year. I look forward to chatting calcio with you next year, and more importantly, listening to you on Vox to Box. So if you speak Italian and you haven't checked out Vox to Box, definitely do so. A lot of great stuff. So thank you so much, my friend, and I look forward to doing this again next year.
Thank you so much, as always, David. We wait for you in Vox to Box.